Okay, maybe just to share some thoughts on the idea of dealing with people, being mashpia on people, and some Torah perspective on the importance of it, how it works, and how to do it. I'll try. Picture you're a rabbi running a Shabbaton, and you hear that you're in the yeshiva at 2 o'clock in the morning Friday night, and you hear that in one of the classrooms there are some guys that are on their phone and smoking weed. And you walk over to the classroom and you see they put one of those magnets on the window. So. So you can't see.
Yeah.
Okay. It's that Friday night. I don't think magnets are mukta. Magnets mukta? I don't think so. Could be they put it on from before Shabbos. So now, what's your response? Even before you go in the door. So, how do you walk in the room? So Hashem had a similar situation with.
How do you know what they're doing?
How do you know what they're doing? Hanan told you. I don't know. whatever. Just sitting in your office watching the cameras, whatever. I don't know. So Hashem had a similar situation. He created this beautiful world, and he puts all the merchav in Gan Eden, and he tells them, there's one thing that I don't want you to do, and that's eat from the Eitz Hadas. They ate from the Eitz Hadas, which was caused tremendous kilkel to the Bria for the rest of the existence of the world. People aren't going to be in Gan Eden anymore. People are going to die. People are going to have to work for a living. It's going to be Tsar Leda, a pretty devastating act. And Hashem is coming to confront Adam about such a thing. Hashem says, this is the time for me to teach Derech Eretz. I'm going to say Ayeka, so I can teach you. Let me knock on the door. I have to act with you in a menschlichtik way before I confront you about the avla that you're doing. I think, I haven't seen it in a while, but I'm pretty sure in the Aretzof, and there's a piece on the Chomer Achet, and the chait of Adam Rishon is what the altar goes to town on, and you see the chomer chait and how much destruction one chait could bring to the entire Bria. And that's what just happened. Hashem said, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to teach Derech Eretz. I'm going to knock and say, Adam, I'm coming, you know, get ready. I don't want to just barge in on you. That's the Derech Eretz that we're supposed to be approaching people, even when they're doing the worst of the worst. What do you say? Not sure. But ideally, it's probably even better not to be in a situation where you have to say anything. We have the Dara Mabel doing a I don't know, from Chazal, it looks like the Dar Mabel was almost as bad as Ardar. Even without the internet, they had the koach to be able to get to such madregas of Ashchasa just with their own creativity. And And Hashem wanted Noach to be mashpia on them. So what does he say? Go build the teva. Why? This way people are going to come over and they're going to ask you what you're doing. And then you'll tell them, well, you know, Hashem's told me to build the teva because he's going to bring a marble to the world. I mean, it sounds like a pretty big leitzanus. I think Bill Cosby has a whole routine on it, no? Build an ark. That was big in my day. I don't know if you ever heard it. But I heard it before the stories came out. So, and then Hashem wants him to start telling them, you know, Hashem told me that he's going to bring a marble and we got to start doing tshuva. Why didn't Hashem say, get out there, give some musa shmuzim, go teach people, there's a Hashem, I guess Hashem mitzvah b'nei Noach that probably came afterwards, but there's certain things that al pisechol that we're supposed to do. That why build the stevo? They'll come ask you what you're doing. Just go tell them to do tshuva. Because pshat is that's not how it works. You can't be mashpi on people that way by telling them to do tshuva. Because people don't like hearing that. They don't listen. If they come and they ask you a question, then it's much more likely that they're going to listen to the response. You know, the question is not, should I do tshuva? The question is, why are you building a teva? So you really want to know? I'll tell you. I'm building a teva because Hashem's going to bring a marble. Really? Why? Because, I don't know, he's just not too happy with what's going on. Oh, maybe I'll do tshuva. Hashem understood how people he made worked, and he understood that that's how you gotta send them the message. Don't just go out there and give musa shmuzim. Don't say, okay, musa about everybody, come listen, and we'll get everybody to do tshuva. You gotta create a scenario where they're gonna start asking you, and then once they're interested, you could tell them. And we're hearing a shmuz from Rabbi Grimblatt. And there's a medrash contrasting Shimshon and Yaakov, and the medrash says Kol Yishar Shabein of Yasa is Shimshon, because his father told him not to marry somebody from the Plishtim, not to marry a Plishti, and he did anyways. Kol Yishar Shabein of Yasa, he wasn't ready to be to take Eitzah, but Yaakov Avinu was someone who takes Eitzah. Why? Because Yitzchak and Rivka told him where to take a wife from, and he listened. So he was a chacham, and he took Eitzah. So remember, Grimblatt asked, he wasn't a chacham taking Eitzah. That stage in his life, he wanted the same thing that his parents were suggesting, that his parents were recommending. So what's the shvach that he was taking their Eitzah? He wasn't taking their Eitzah. By the way, interrupt me, I'm getting a little tired of hearing myself. So he was taking Eitzah. So, Rabbi asked, he wasn't taking Eitzah. He was doing what he wanted. It happened to be it was the same thing that his parents wanted. So how is that called a Chacham? Why is he being called a Chacham for taking Eitzah? So, Rabbi was Masber. That pshat is that if he wasn't a Chacham, then the fact that his parents were telling him to do that, Gufa would be a reason why he wouldn't. Because people don't like being told what to do. And even though Batson, that's what he wanted to do, but now that his parents were telling him what to do, if he wasn't the Chacham, he would have said, now I'm Dafka not doing it. I demonstrated this to one of my classes. I was holding my keys, and I accidentally dropped them next to one of the kids sitting in the class. So he picked them up, and you know, he gave them to me. So I walked by again, I dropped it, and I said to him, pick it up. He looks at me like, I'm like, well, what's your problem? Is that a second ago you just picked him up without me even asking. Like, I thought you liked me. Pshat is, as soon as you tell me what to do, even though it's something I would have done on my own, now I don't want to do it. And that's how it works with Tochacha also. As soon as you tell somebody to do it, even if it was something that they would have done on their own, the natural reaction, unless somebody worthy of that shvach that Yaakov was worthy of being a chacham of that level of being ready to be mekabel etza, the natural reaction is that people don't want to do it.
Didn't Shimshon want to marry Plishti the other way
No. Not Shimshon was Yosher Bein of Yasser. He didn't listen to his father. Not Dafka because his father told him. He was Yosher Bein of Yasser. He did what he wanted and he wasn't Mekabel Eitzah. But Yaakov was Mekabel Eitzah. He was a Chacham.
But it seems like Hashem told him there that you should go just to yell at them. Is there a time that, like, let's say for that example you gave at the beginning, people are doing those things on Shabbos. So it's not really a situation where you could create an environment for, they obviously don't care, like, or they do care, but they justified it. Whatever it is, they're not in that situation for sure. In that moment, you're not creating a situation where they're like, why should I not be doing this? Can you please inform me, like, how to get out of this Yetzirah of mine? That's not so. Sometimes,
okay, there are a lot.
Say something, then you're kind of like Shlihu Kaido. Maybe you should say something, even though you're not going to get them to change.
There are a lot of things that have to be taken into consideration. And if a guy is about to kill somebody, it's not necessarily a chinuch moment. You want to save his life. And it could be in a situation like that where this whole Shabbos going on also may not necessarily be a chinuch moment, and it's something that you just got to put a stop to. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's best for their chinuch and the future likelihood of them not being mechal Shabbos.
So there are times where you have to say something even though it's not the best way to teach a lesson.
Right.
Just because you just have to do it.
Right. These are just factors to keep in mind that should influence on your hashara on how to be mashpia. That's where
you
I'm coming from.
Understand that people don't want to be told what to do.
People don't want to be told what to do, and very often, telling them what to do has the exact opposite effect.
But there are times when you have to tell them what to do anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, because I think, I don't know, maybe I'm just assuming, I think people take that message to the extreme. I mean, they're wrong for it, but let's say that you see parents who grew up being told what to do, what not to do, probably because the parents were kind of machanach them. Maybe they didn't do a good job, but a lot of times just because that's what their parents think is the right thing, and they weren't misinformed or uninformed. So then the children, when they raise their children, they don't ever tell them anything. And then you see the products of such parents.
Right. Obviously, it's all about balance.
The fact that they were told, you have to teach your kids something. You can't never tell your kids off. Like,
right.
So they grow up being...
No, there's...
You're not doing that all the time, you're saying? You're saying you're just doing that to stop the bleeding, or
it depends on the situation, and it does work to a certain degree, and it does work if it's the right relationship and the right amount of times that you use that technique, it'll probably work. But you got to keep these, you got to take these factors into consideration, yeah. You have Avraham Avinu trying to figure out how to convince people to do a bris milah. Not such an easy feat to pull off. And this week's parasha, it's called, the Torah refers to it as Elone Mamre, because he was the one who gave him the advice. Do it yourself first. So sometimes better than telling them what to do is setting that example. And when you set the example and you show them what to do, then sometimes that can have a much, much greater hashra in terms of the long-term chinuch. When you show them what to do instead of telling them what to do, then it can have a much, much greater hashra. Maybe this is part of it, why it has a greater hashra, because there is no, you know, defense mechanism going up. You tell me what to do. I'm doing a bris milah because this is what I hold. What's right? Oh, you hold that's right. I'll follow in your first in your footsteps. Maybe that's part of it. I'm sure there's other parts there too. But when you set an example like Mamre told Avraham Avinu, I would think. I remember in 11th grade, I was in Tiferes Yisrael. And Rabbi Shai Cohn came to speak. Back in those days, he was big into this, big into, he's still into it, but of specifically in terms of people should understand and appreciate the truth of Torah being Min HaShemayim, not just believing it, but knowing it as a fact, and having these I guess mini Arachim seminars in the yeshivas, where they basically prove to you that Torah is Min HaShemayim. And I remember being very, very impressed on wanting to grow up to be like him, and being able to take on anybody in an argument and prove to them that Torah was Min HaShemayim, and thinking that with that powerful intellectual argument, to be able to win people over. And that's the way to be mashpia on people. It's definitely helpful, and it's a good thing to have up your sleeve. We find at the end of Parshas Bereishis, it says Noach Motzachim b'nei Hashem, and I believe it's a Sfarno that says that the reason why his children had the schus to be saved is because he was Motzachim b'nei Hashem. Hashem was going lefnei mishur hadin with him and giving him beyond what he really deserved, because Noach was right to have himself saved because he was a tzaddik, but although he attempted to be mashpi on the dar, he didn't teach them to the right extent, I guess, v'dasis Hashem v'lelechus b'drachav, and says ki b'zeh yesh tikva, through that maybe there'd be a little bit of hope that he'd be able to get them to do tshuva. So here you have again the dar that's male hashchasa, the lowest of the low, and you want to be mashpi on them. So what are you going to teach them? What are you going to do? Okay, so you're going to build the teva, and then they're going to come over and they're going to ask, and then what message do you send them? What they say? Okay, let's sit down and learn whatever it is. What do you talk to them about? Talk to them how terrible their actions are.
You can bring a rat from Noach, it didn't work.
But that was the tain on him. He didn't do it. Ki b'zeh yesh tikva. The Sfarno says that if he would have done that, then there would have been hope. But this is what he didn't do. He says ki b'zeh yesh tikva. If he would have done this, then there would have been hope that they would do tshuva.
What did Noach do? He built the teva.
Hashem told him to build the teva. So you see that's Hashem's mahalach of get them to come over and ask. So showing from there, the Sfarno says that the reason why Noach wasn't zocha out his own schusim to have his children saved is because he didn't teach them odasis Hashem v'lelechus
b'drachav. What are you doing
to ask? I don't know. But it says
it's destroy the world.
It says he didn't teach them odasis Hashem v'lelechus b'drachav. To think that how do you be mashpia on this dar that so mali hashchasa? You teach him l'dasas Hashem alechus b'drachov. L'dasas Hashem alechus b'drachov. That's halach to b'drachov. Mahu racham, avato racham, chanan. Right? Yigdil midos. I think that's what halach to b'drachov means. So here you have these people that are being over Eish HaSish and Mishkav Zachar and killing people and avodah zarah. And what are you going to teach them? The nuances of Hashem's chesed and Hashem's rachmanis. Apparently, that's what brings people closer to Hashem. Now, how do you do that? So I'm not sure, but I think that a lot of it is setting an example. How do you set an example about the Darchei Hashem? I mean, Chazal tell us that people associate those that are learning Torah with Hashem. And the way people that are learning Torah behave, people associate that with the Torah. They blame that on the Torah, whether it's good or whether it's bad. Stamakasha, why they blame their behavior, whether it's good or bad, on the fact that they're learning. I never really understood that. What was your svarach itzon before you saw this guy? Does the Torah make you good or does the Torah make you bad? So if you see he's bad, why do you conclude and before you thought he's good, that the Torah makes you good. So why does that make you think the Torah made him bad? I don't know why.
Worse.
But why are you connecting his behavior to the fact that he learns Torah?
Connected to less than supper.
And so you're blaming his behavior on the fact that okay, so fine. So why isn't the conclusion I made a mistake, the Torah doesn't make him holy? Why is the conclusion that the Torah is the one that made him bad?
So why is he not think that the hanacha that Torah should make you good?
Okay, so let that hanacha get slugged up. Why do you have to go to the other extreme?
Let's say.
Yeah, okay. I'm saying apparently people do it, but whatever it is. People. The Metzius is, and you see it all the time, when you have a Chiddush, it doesn't have to be somebody who's learning. It's only somebody who people think is learning. If you have a guy who's in yeshiva all day and people see him, they don't know he's battling all day. They think he's learning. They'll still connect his behavior to the Torah because they think he's learning. So that creates the greater achrayas on us also, even if we're battling. But the metzius is that people look at people that are learning, and they connect their behavior with the Torah, which is Hashem. And Dr. Goldman gave a session to the Rebbeim a few years ago, and he was explaining how a kesher with a Rebbe translates to a kesher with Hashem. If a Talmud feels a Rebbe loves him, then he starts feeling Hashem loves me. I guess it's along the same lines that people associate B'nai Torah with the Torah and with Hashem. So when they see the way people are behaving, they say, hey, that's how Hashem behaves. That's what Hashem is all about. I want a piece of that. And that gets them to do tshuva from the lowest levels of hashchasa. What is ways of demonstrating the levels of those Darchei Hashem that we're trying to show people? So I remember Shmuz at the Rashiva cave. I remember this because I heard the Shmuz shortly after I got engaged, and Rabbi Luban happened to be in the yeshiva that Shabbos when the Rashiva gave the Shmuz, and he made sure I got pshat, as you'll see why in a second. It says that before Avram Avinu had a child with Hagar, so Sarah said, "Atzerani Hashem Yiladis." Hashem prevented me from giving birth. And that's why she was, Chazal say, that's why she was eventually zocha to have children, to become the aim of Kal Yisrael. What was the big deal of saying Atzerani Hashem Yiladis? Because at that point it was unclear if their lack of ability to have a child was a result of something wrong with Sarah or something wrong with Avram, because Avram didn't have Yishmael yet. So it was unclear who was at fault. And Sarah took responsibility. So since Sarah took responsibility, so Hashem says, because of that sensitivity that you had to Avram Avinu, you're going to be zocha to have a child now. So I remember the Rosh Yeshiva being Mitzayer. Here we have Avram Avinu, who was the ultimate Baal Chesed. Right? He was, that's what Avram Avinu was known for, his chesed. Even to the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and he takes them in, serves them like kings. Avram Avinu was the ultimate Baal Chesed. And you would imagine that the relationship that he had with Sarah after all these years, I don't know exactly how many years they were married for at that point, but I think it was many, many years. Imagine if that's the kind of relationship that he had with Stam, three Arab of the Avodah Zarah from the street. Imagine the wonderful relationship he had with Sarah. And I suspect that he would not have been insulted if Sarah used the lashon of "we can't have a child," because that was the metzius. And he knew that when Sarah was using the lashon of "atzirani Hashem iladis," that Hashem prevented me, that she was just making that up and she didn't even know if it was true. But she was taking responsibility just to be nice, even though she wasn't really taking responsibility, because she couldn't be taking responsibility. She didn't know if it was true. So how good could that have made Avram feel already? And their relationship was probably already an amazing, amazing relationship. So he's pointing out, you see how important it is to Hashem to have that, to take that amazing relationship that we already have and boost it one level further. This happened to be in a marriage, but the Rosh Yeshiva was applying it to all personal relationships. That you see from here, I assume a marriage is more important, but you see from here how important it is to Hashem to take that relationship to the next level. And you see similarly, the Malachim came to Avram Avinu, and they said, "Ayesar Yishtecha." Sharfim quoted this morning, and he said that she's in the oil. And Rashi brings down the Medrash. The Malachim knew where Sarah was. Why are they asking? So the other pshat that Rabbi Sharfim didn't quote this morning is that they did it k'dei l'chavav al baila. Avram Avinu will refocus on the fact that Sarah is a tzinua. That's going to create a greater level of chavivas than there already was to this awesome marriage. And they wanted to create that level of chavivas. Now the Malachim had a very specific job. They came to save Lot. They came to tell Avram Avinu that he was going to have a son. Then they came to destroy Sodom, right? I think those were the three jobs of the Malachim. They had very specific jobs. But they decided, let's do one more thing. Let's improve the relationship between Sarah and Avram one more notch. Again, you see how important it is. This is Hashem actually doing it himself through the Malachim. I assume Hashem wanted the Malachim to do this. You see again the importance of in Hashem's eyes, of taking those relationships and bringing them to a drop higher level, even though they're already amazing, amazing relationships.
Is it because a little bit does a lot, or a little bit is so valuable?
What do you mean by does a lot? What would it do?
Meaning a drop more perfect diamond is worth thousands more dollars. So this relationship, when they respect each other a little more, or the chavivas is a little more, so that's going to prevent a fight. I don't know. It'll make a bigger difference or prevent a whatever. Okay, or?
I don't know. Could be. Yeah.
Is Rabbi trying to say in our people must be a better, you should have a better relationship? Is Rabbi trying to make that drop?
Yes, but it's within this context of teaching people that that's Hashem v'lechas v'drachav, and setting an example and letting them realize that's what Hashem is about. That's what the Torah is about. If you put this together, that's what Hashem wants from us. That's what Hashem is about. And I think that that's a major reason why it's interesting. It's actually, maybe some of you know that there's a kid in the high school who's doing very, very nicely. And he wasn't doing so nicely so recently. And he just recently was asking me, like, "Rebbe, how'd you brainwash me?" So I didn't know the answer to that. I wasn't sure. Like, I wasn't sure what was effective, but I assume a lot has to do with this. I assume that's why relationship in being mashpia on a person is so crucial, because they're associating you with the Torah, with Hashem. You're sensitive to them. You care about them. that's a siman to them of halachta bedrachov, what the darchei Hashem are, and that has a tremendous hashpa, whatever a person is doing, to get a person to do tshuva, to want to connect.
If it's halach on you, let's say he starts hating you, is that all going to reverse?
It depends why. In other words, if I assume it'll have that connection also. In other words, if he starts hating you because of the way you're interacting with him, and then he starts associating your behavior with Hashem, then it's very likely that it could have that negative effect also. People say, I don't want to have any people, I mean, you see it has, could have that kind of negative effect. People say, I don't want to have any part of this if this is how Ben Torah acts.
But outside of that, if you do something that's, I mean, I guess automatically it's associated with that.
So Lamaisa, putting things together over here a little bit. Is that the koach to be mashpia? Is first of all, you got to have a lot of derech eretz, and there's almost never a situation, maybe never a situation, that entitles a person to lose derech eretz for the person that he's giving tochacha to or trying to be mashpia on. That's a lesson that we learn from Hashem. You gotta realize that the natural reaction whenever you tell anybody to do something is not to listen. That's the way people are. I was talking to a parent, and the parent says, "You know, my kid is like a regular teenager. He doesn't like being told what to do." So I said, "You know, the truth is, adults like being told what to do even less. He's just maturing maybe a little bit faster." That's why it's very, when people see some, like a rav, it's much less often. I was talking to a rabbi in one of our branches that was telling me that there's no problem with guys putting their heads down in the Beis Medrash, because what they did was they assigned a zone to each rabbi, and as soon as somebody puts their head down, the rabbi walks right over to the guy and taps him on the shoulder. So I asked him, let's say you were davening in a shul, and the Rav did that. Anytime anyone in the shul put their head down, he just left the shtender, right over to the guy, tapped him on the shoulder. What would you think about that rabbi? He says, he would never do such a thing. Because adults don't tolerate disrespect, and children tolerate it a little bit more because they have no choice. But that doesn't mean that it's effective. When you do these kind of controlling responses, it usually gets the exact opposite result. I was talking to a mother who...
What do you mean it gets the exact opposite? His head's up now.
His head's up now, but that's not really the result that you're looking for. You want him to have a chashivas for davening. You want him to be machshav Torah. You want him to respect you, the rabbi, who's representing Torah, so it probably has the exact opposite result. I was talking to a parent along the same lines, and they were telling me how they have a system with their kid that if they don't get up for chakras, they lose their phone for the day, and it works very well. He's been getting up for chakras. I said it works very well. He just take away his phone and says, yeah, he understands. There's a consequence for his actions, so, and he's okay with that, he's good with that. I said, okay, she was there, I was meeting with her and her husband, so I said, excuse the example, but I said, let's imagine one morning your husband says something really not nice to you, and you don't like it, and you want to make sure it never happens again. So you say, okay, listen, he has to understand there's consequences to the actions, to his actions, and now after he comes home from a long day's of work, and he comes to the kitchen for supper. You tell him, I'm sorry, dear, there's no supper for you tonight. I don't like the way you spoke to me this morning, and you have to understand that that's not okay. And it's okay, there's consequences for your action. Do you think that would be helpful for him to get the message? And now in the future, he's going to make sure he speaks to you nicely because he understands he wants supper. So she started hearing the other side a little bit. But somehow when it comes to younger people, we don't have that kind of attitude. And we have a much more controlling attitude. Maybe they could receive it a little bit more because they are less mature and they do tolerate being told what to do. But everyone, to a certain extent, has that. And yeah, as they get older, it's not a teenage thing. It's just that once they become adults, it becomes normal. And when they're teenagers, we still expect them to be like kids. But that's the way really everybody is to a certain extent, and that's why we have to take this approach of, obviously, there are times that you got to speak up, and they won't necessarily ask, and you got to, even when you speak up, there are ways to do it in a better way that don't create that negative reaction. But the real idea is to try to create a scenario where they will ask. They'll be much more receptive to be makabel the answers. Try to create a scenario where you could demonstrate for them rather than tell them, but set an example and do it in a way where where you're really showing them the godless of Hashem in terms of Hashem's midos, and then they're going to say that I want a part of this, and they'll give up all their hashchasa.
Rabbi was saying there's still time to consequences.
What?
I'm saying, like, Rabbi seems to be saying, like, taking away the phone is just like bad idea. I'm saying he is doing something wrong. So, like, wait, you're not, like, so how would you deal with that situation? I'm saying, like, you make consequences. You do something wrong, you get a consequence. It was a very extreme example that Rabbi gave to this woman.
You want to know what I told her?
Rabbi just told her.
She asked you what? No. I told her what not to do. That's what I told you. I told her, so she said, so what should I do? So I told her, he knows exactly what you want. I said, why don't you try this? Next time he sleeps in, when he wakes up, make him a gourmet breakfast. Give him a gourmet breakfast and serve him like a king. And see what happens. Don't say a word to him about missing shachars. So Shitaka tried that, and she came back to me and said it was unbelievable. You just started getting up for chakras after that. Because you took away the battle. What's the message that you send to your kid when you give him a gourmet breakfast after he sleeps through chakras? What's the message that you're sending? I love you. I feel terrible that you slept through chakras. I'm not going to say anything to you because I know you feel bad about it also. I wish you would get up. And just to show you how much I love you, I'm making you an awesome breakfast. That's going to get him up the next morning.
I would take it as a very sarcastic action by my mother.
Okay. And as I heard from Rabbi Eli Kaufman in Dallas, sincerity is the most important thing. And if you could fake that, you haven't made. Everybody say, have a wonderful